Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime, to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime, at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death case and you want to be considered for a segment on a future show, email us, please, at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
And tonight, CrimeWire is going to update the case of Sergeant Patrick Rust. Sergeant Rust was assigned to the 10th Mountain Division headquarters at Fort Drum in Watertown, New York. He returned from a deployment to Afghanistan in January of 2007. That March, he went missing, and his remains were discovered in a farmer's field outside of Watertown that September. The cause and manner of his death remain undetermined. Judy Rust, Patrick's mother, has spent the last 3 years trying to learn what happened to her son. Judy is here tonight to talk with us about the case, along with forensic investigator and CrimeWire consultant Bill Sullivan. And Bill also is the owner of Forensic Consulting Specialties in Syracuse, New York. Judy and Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denny.
Judy, let me start with you, if I may. Now, we had you on the show several weeks ago talking about this case. There have been some developments since then, mainly the involvement of Bill trying to help out to get some information for you, help you get the information.
Yeah.
But for the listeners who aren't familiar or didn't hear the first show, my facts, I believe, are correct that Patrick had just returned in January 2007 from a deployment to Afghanistan. He took a short leave and returned to Fort Drum. And in March, about March 15th, I believe, he wanted to move off base. So he moved in with one of his friends, also in the 10th Mountain Division, who had
right.
an apartment in Watertown. Am I correct so far?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so he spent the night of the 15th at the new apartment in Watertown, or the apartment he was sharing now with this other soldier.
Yeah.
On the 16th of March, the day before St. Patrick's Day, after work, and Patrick didn't have a driver's license or he didn't have a vehicle. And after work, he and his roommate went shopping to a shopping mall in Watertown. After they had some food at one of the food courts in the mall. After that, they went to a tanning salon, and the roommate wanted to get a tan. Patrick declined, so he left at that point. According to the official record, that was the last time his roommate saw him. And we'll get in now in a few minutes here with Bill as to what happened the rest of that night, at least as far as the record indicates. But that is pretty accurate, Judy, that he had moved in, spent one night in the new apartment, and then on the following night, which was March 16th, he went missing.
Yep, they went out, and he never got back to the apartment.
Okay. And a missing persons report was filed at the Watertown City Police Department, and you heard nothing for several months. In fact, it was 6 months to the day later that a farmer in a field, what I believe was 3 or 4 miles out of Watertown, was cutting the field, was mowing.
Right.
And he came across Patrick's remains at that point. Is that accurate?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
And the remains were sent, they were processed by the Army. In fact, the Army sent a team there to recover the remains. They took them, I believe, was to Maryland, perhaps, for an autopsy. And as we speak tonight, the cause and manner of Patrick's death remain undetermined.
Right.
Okay. Bill, you
yes.
have gotten involved now in the case to try to help get some answers for Judy. And what's the status of the investigation as of tonight?
Well, as you know, this summer I provided some consultation with you and Mrs. Rust and some of her friends that were trying to help her, and recently have been formally involved in attempting to get information from the Watertown Police Department, the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, and the United States Army. I've spoken with the Army, who, by the way, has been extremely cooperative and is in the process of re-reviewing this case for possible reopening. Now, they haven't said whether they're going to reopen the case or not, but they are giving serious thought to it, and they're going to read through the records and then meet with me and the family. On the other hand, I've made a formal request of the Watertown Police Department for all of their records concerning the missing persons report and any efforts that were made to find him while he was a missing persons. I have gotten a letter back stating that I should go to the sheriff's office for the Watertown PD records, something that is unheard of. You don't get one agency's record from another. So I've made a formal request by registered mail to Watertown PD. I haven't heard anything back yet. Today, I did get a receipt from the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office that they are refusing to release any records on Patrick's death. I do have some records that were released through the Army, and also I believe a summary was given to Mrs. Rust by the Sheriff's Office. Mrs. Rust, this addendum that you received in June, was that directly from the Sheriff's Office?
Yep, I got that back in June. It was a four-page report.
Right.
That was
right.
I asked for the whole time they were working on it, and they gave me a four-page report.
Right. Well, this is pretty interesting because this report, I have it here in front of me, says in it, and this is by the lead detective, though most of the investigative questions have been answered, he's meaning in the Patrick Rust case, the reason for Mr. Rust being in the field at that location and how he arrived there are still unknown. The remains of Mr. Rust have been examined and the cause of death is inconclusive. So he, in his mind, the investigative questions have been answered, even though the only question that has been answered in this case is that Patrick Rust? And by DNA and dental records, it has been proven to be Patrick's skeletonized remains that were found in that field. To say that the investigative questions have been answered is just ridiculous. They haven't been answered. How he got to that field, what he was doing there. We know he was last alive at last spoken to near 1 o'clock in the morning that day. So how did he get seven and a half miles away? And he may have been intoxicated at the time. He was leaving a bar. He was on foot. He was close to his own residence. How he would end up in that field, there's no cause of death. There's no manner of death. It hasn't been listed as a homicide, suicide, or any other type of death.
So how can they closed the case. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, and in one place on this, it says the case remains inactive, and in another place, it says it's closed. But yet, in contacting the sheriff's office by formal letter, they're saying they're not releasing anything because obviously they didn't say it that it was open, but they're saying it would interfere with investigative procedure.
But it doesn't sound like, right. Judy, it doesn't sound like there has been anything and that they haven't really communicated any information to you, have they?
They haven't. I even called the DA and asked her about the case to get information because they weren't giving me anything. And she said she had to call up the detective to see if it was still open. She said it's still inactive and she can't give me any information either. But we had a tip line back in April and May, and
uh-huh.
we've got some tip calls on it. One of them was from a girl in Potsdam that was talking to another girl that her boyfriend had known the Fort Drum soldier who had came up missing.
I would be careful. You know, you got people listening. You probably got the person who committed the crime listening.
Oh.
You got other people listening.
Yeah.
I would not out that information. I think it's important that you not do that.
Okay. And then we had another tip line with a bunch of, it was a Fort Drum number, and a bunch of guys were talking in the background, but never said anything. And we had called the sheriff department and asked them if they would come and listen to these tip lines. And he says, yes. Well, he never came. And I made several calls to find out when he's going to listen to them. And he never got back to me. So I finally got hold of him, and I wanted to get the report for what he had been doing, the one that Bill has. And I went there to pick it up, and he wasn't there. He left it at the front desk. Well, I looked at it, and I had a question, so it was 20 minutes to a half hour later. I went back in, and the detective happened to be there at that time, which I think he was there to begin with and just didn't want to face me.
I mean, this has been very frustrating, you know, for the family. And when you can't get answers, and I think I had asked you when you were on the show last time to create a Facebook page, you know, a site with your son's name, .com, justice for him. Were you able to do that? Were you able to put together some kind of a site or a Facebook page for this case?
We have, I did have.
Do you have one up now? No. This is really important, especially it's the holidays. And I think that, you know, Denny, you would agree, it tugs at people. The information crawls on the web. Even if it's a Facebook page, somebody's going to see it and perhaps offer tips. Perhaps even if you set up a Magic Jack, which is you go to Best Buy, it's $39, and then it's $1 a year for a telephone service that you can have people call in on and leave information or tips. Something, because people do remember. People, like you said, that somebody had said that they knew the soldier, they knew your son.
Right.
People will come forward if you start posting things up. Even if you did a blog with your son's name on it, you know, your son's name was .blogspot.com, like we have crimewire.blogspot.com, and then you tag it with where he was stationed, you tag it with his name, you tag it with suspicious death, you tag it with, you know, cold case, looking for answers, you tag certain words, and that's what's going to get more momentum. In every case we have done, in every case I've done the last couple of years, it has either gotten closer to getting the case resolved, or it is investigated, or information comes forward where it's in the process of being investigated. So then you really take what's cold, what's, you know, what they say is not open, not investigated, you know, you take that and you become your own best detective. And I strongly suggest you do that.
Well,
okay.
I've got to say, I may be partially to blame for that, because
why?
When I got involved in the case formally about a month and a half ago, I asked Mrs. Russ to hold up until we got formal information from all of the departments that were involved in this, which are three: the Army, Watertown PD, and Jefferson County Sheriff.
I understand that, but I tell people to do that, and I'm not trying to be interruptive, but this is the bottom line. All it is, it can be, is the name. I mean, it's not to out anything or to point fingers. It's just to get it so that they can see some momentum, and in a lot of cases, those entities will respond in a much more appropriate way.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you. What I was trying to do is see what information had already been investigated so that we didn't reinvent the wheel. And I think now I've got a much better picture of it, and we're going to need help. You bet. Your suggestion is taken.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Bill. For the benefit of the listeners, spent a little time with Judy over the summer, and I'm fairly familiar with the case. It seems to me, well, first of all, you got the added, I mean, it's tough enough dealing with bureaucracies at any time, but here you have three, as Bill just mentioned. You got two civilian police agencies and, of course, the military, which just more hoops that you have to jump through to try to get any information. But it seems to me that the military piece, this, because not only was Patrick, of course, active duty at the time of his disappearance and death, but many of the other players that would have or should have knowledge of his activities and so forth were in the military at that time, and some of them are probably still in the military, although they may have been transferred to other assignments. So
That's a great point. Many of the people that would have knowledge of Patrick and would have knowledge of him in the service are gone. They're no longer in Watertown, and some of them are no longer in the Army. So trying to reinvestigate this is going to be pretty difficult. But I thought there had been much more done on this case than apparently there has been. I will say that the Army, even though they're not a civilian police force, did an absolutely excellent job at the forensics and on their part of the investigation. It seems to me it's our own local departments that may have dropped the ball. I can't say for sure because I can't see the reports. But the one thing that I want everybody out there to listen to is this man, you know, toted a rifle on my behalf and on the behalf of the citizens of the United States. He went to Afghanistan voluntarily. I mean, he's a U.S. soldier. Don't we owe him an explanation and his family an explanation of what happened to him? I mean, I really think this is, and not that he's different than a lot of other families are going through across the United States, but this is just another example of people not getting answers, and it's just not right.
Well, Bill, do you think, from what you're saying tonight, I think the Army's current posture on this now, that they have agreed to not reopen necessarily, but at least take a second look at what they have about all the reports and all the documents and their investigation, I think that that would be a tremendous boost to the investigation. I mean, especially if they decide to actually reopen the case, because they have, from what I saw when I was looking at this thing, the Army, from what I could tell, did the best job of the three entities.
Exactly.
Yes. And not that there weren't, you know, some things maybe that could have been done better, which I guess they're looking at now. But And they have probably the best chance to locate some of these people who may have been key players or should have been maybe interviewed or interviewed in more detail back in 2007. So I don't know. It just strikes me that if the military is willing to get this thing going again, take another look, that could be an absolute tremendous development for Judy and in getting to the bottom of this or getting some answers. Do you feel that way, or am I giving that too much?
No, you're absolutely correct. And if the Army reopens their investigation or at least besides on a partial reopening, redoing some of the interviews or tracking down some of the people, it would be a tremendous help. And I think maybe it would stimulate the local departments to also jump in. Although, who knows? I really don't know.
Can I ask, I don't know if Denny, if you know this, or Bill, if you know this, is the police department there or the Army, who has jurisdiction if it's somebody that's already in service? Is it?
Well, he was technically on leave at the time. So he was due to ship back overseas again. So he wasn't like an active military man on the base at the time. He wasn't living on the base at the time. So typically he's a really a civilian death, even though he was an Army personnel. So it's not like somebody that died in another country in the military or anything. So there's kind of a dual authority there. And the Army does have, you know, some law enforcement powers. They generally, in situations like this, work it with local agencies. However, they may step up even more. I don't know. I have a good feeling in talking to the Army CID at Watertown. I have a very good feeling and a very good vibe from them. I do know the forensics that they did in this case were very, very good.
Judy, have you kept track of your son's roommate, the person that was on base with him?
No, I never met him, and I haven't. Last I knew, he was in Korea, and I think he's out of the service now. I have no idea where he is.
Has anybody kept up with you that was in service with him, you know, kept in contact with you at all, or sent you a card or an email saying, you know, anything new on the case? Or have you got anything like that since his death?
I used to, when we first put it out, I did have a blog on the internet when it first came out, and I did get a lot of emails, but nothing that was going to tell me anything. But then after the case, you know, after it all slowed down, I haven't heard anything, got any more emails or anything on it.
What have you thought about maybe kind of redoing the blog? Would that be, is that something you have time to do maybe?
Yeah, I can now that it's all out and open again. Like I said, I've attempted so many times to get hold of detectives and the sheriff, and nobody's got back to me, and I didn't know where to go, and I tried getting hold of the CID and several times. And there are new people up there. So by the time I got them, I talked to them quite a lot, and they finally did get back to me and said that they would meet with me so I could go and talk to them about it. And then that's when they thought maybe they should be getting involved again. And that's when I started working with Bill and had them contact Bill, or Bill contact them.
Denny, what were you going to say?
Yeah, just for clarification, you know, when we were talking about the Judy mentioned earlier about the tip line and some of the calls that came in.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one of the I got involved a little bit, and I actually myself spoke with one of the callers, and I asked her, I talked about the information she had, and I asked her, I said, well, has anyone from law enforcement contacted you about this? And she said, no, you're the only person I've heard from. And I won't go into the details, but the nature of the information is going to require having to get information on another individual through a governmental agency. In other words, it's going to be a major privacy issue where I or Bill or anybody couldn't just walk into this government agency off the street and ask to see certain information. So at some point, in order to get the full benefit from what this girl knows, somebody with the authority, such as a police agency, is going to have to be the one. And like Judy said, she called, and the detective promised to come over, but they never showed up. So this information that could, and again, I say could, because you get a lot of information in these cases that doesn't pan out, but certainly it should have been or should be looked into And it's very frustrating that that hasn't happened. And unless Judy can get a police agency involved to follow up and get the additional information that only they can get, it's just very frustrating.
So then what about benefits, you know, insurance policy and things, because there was no cause, you know, the deaths, when it was finally resolved in some way, it doesn't sound like it was. Are benefits paid then to someone based on, you know, he's found with
when
no determination?
Yes, they do pay benefits on life insurance. Only when the question would come up if there would be a clause, and you usually don't find that in military policies that I'm aware of about accidental and that kind of thing. So his benefits were paid upon proof of his death, which was done by the Army. And again, you know, I can't say enough good things about the Army. I'm meeting with them next week. To meet with CID, just to let them know, you know, how we're going to cooperate with them. And, you know, I'm going to ask them to please take a, you know, a long, hard look at this case and see what they can do. I'm going to further, for my own knowledge, define how far the Army can go off the base and investigate. They have certain powers, but this is a little bit different. This is not a military person in the act of being a military person that died. So for my own clarification, if they can go all the way with it, that's fine.
But
you know?
If he was called to war tomorrow on an emergency, I guess what I think of somebody that serves our country, whether they are taking a little time off, they are always serving our country until they are no longer in service.
I think you're correct on that, but as far as the investigation, generally, because the local district attorney would be the one to prosecute rather than a military tribunal, I think the local law enforcement actually does most of the investigative legwork, and I think partially that's what happened here. The military assisted with some of the military personnel, and they did most all of the forensics. So I don't see the Army is real lacking, but there's some things that I think they'll look at that they did that maybe they're going to try and redo. I'm not sure of that. I can't.
Judy, I remember there was money or something, a check that was supposed to come. Your son was going to have a payment of something.
Whenever you're saying that, and then after I get off, no, he wasn't supposed to have any money coming to him.
Okay, a check or something. I thought maybe he was, you know, re-upping. There was money. Okay. I don't know why that came to mind.
You mentioned that last time we talked, and then after I got off, I said, you know what, he wasn't going to have a check coming because you thought somebody else had taken it or something.
I had asked if that was possible, yeah, and if you were, you know, in contact with the people that were, sharing.
Yeah, he had his paycheck was going into an account.
Okay.
He never had money coming to him. It was always going in his account.
So it was direct deposit.
Yeah, right to the bank. Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, next week then could be kind of a banner week, depending on what you learn when you're meeting with the CID people.
Well, I think this meeting will mainly be informative, and they're going to tell me how far along they are in reviewing their file. One of the things that's just a fact of life with the military is the military CID people are here today and by assignment are gone, you know, next week. That's just a fact of life. And the gentleman that has taken over this file, I've spoken to twice, and he seems like he's out to do the right thing. He seems like he's studying the file. And the first thing he said to me was that he'd like to get together with me and find out my thoughts and questions. And I can't argue with that. I certainly haven't heard that from anybody else.
And I also think it's important, Judy, you know, you have, you know, a lot of families give up. They but you have fought every step of the way for justice, for answers. And
I have
and,
tried.
You know,
I mean, I've contacted, like I said, I haven't heard anything from the police department since July. The last time I talked, and the last time we talked to them, there was nothing else they could do. He gave me that report, and he was all done with me. We even told them, asked them if they would call CrimeWire and talk to somebody there, and he refused to do that. He wasn't interested.
But now you have, you know, somebody come up to reports and basically be the code decoder on the case, which I'm sure has made all the difference in the world.
Yes.
Wow. We're going to take a new focus on this now, and you know the things that you've mentioned tonight are well taken. What's been done before should be maybe done again, as far as the internet and a lot of that. You know, I'm kind of an old school guy. I'm shoe leather, and those kind of things I kind of forget about sometimes. I'm pouring through reports and speaking with agencies, and you're right, that's the other half of that probably gets more done and more information than even.
And I didn't mean to be, you know, interruptive.
It
pulled the hair off my back, because I'm like, I told her to do this. This is how you do it right away. There's a reason for it. When we do these shows, we get to see where it goes. We get to see, you know, the certain things that happen. And I was of the old school as well, but in the cases that I've worked on and we've worked on across the country, and what I see that works or what doesn't work, I'm the last person that's going to out anything or compromise an investigation. There's a lot of cases that I get, I'll say, you know, take everything down or don't do this. In a case where the person's already gone, you can't go down any lower than where you aren't.
And so that
some kind of a movement, and this is what, you know, families don't understand. Even we've had people on the show who, prior to them coming on, I'm sure Kim Colton, the director of research, or Denny will say, or Vita will say that, you know, they'll say, well, I can't talk about this because so-and-so is doing this. I said, no, are they doing anything now? Well, no, it's not about saying anything that anybody doesn't know. It's not about a loyalty or misdirection. It's about, you know, you never know who's listening. You never know in these podcasts. We have gotten emails before. We have gotten tips. And while our policy on this show is not to run out and say, we saw this, we got this done, or this happened because of this, because I don't think that serves a purpose. But what the families can do, and like I said, sometimes if they see the mother, like Judy, or in these other cases, if they see somebody out there, and again, holiday time. You know, Monica from the Q Center, who's part of CrimeWire, does an amazing job of getting billboards up. She does an amazing job of getting stuff up there. And people will say sometimes, well, I'm on this site, so I don't need to be on this one. You do. In all those cases in Oklahoma, they're all on the justiceforthedead.com site. They need to be separated out because somebody might come forward, and this is somebody who served our country, and you know, I just think that, like I said, some of the old school stuff, yeah, it does apply in these cases, but that's why when we do these shows, we hope that the families do this, because it helps what we do, and it helps hopefully what will happen for them.
Oh, absolutely, and you know, that's why I'm consulting with you and Denny and everyone, because I'm learning just as much as I'm, you know, trying to contribute.
But you're also doing this pro bono, which many people do not do, and you have to be commended for that, because...
Well, this case in particular now is no longer pro bono. Mrs. Rust has agreed to cover some of the expenses on it. Every case I do is not going to be pro bono, but I do a lot of them. And you referred another interesting case to me this week again. And, you know, somebody has to step up and do some of these things. Somebody's got to help these families. And I applaud you for your work.
Well, it's all of us, though. I mean, it's all. I mean, that's what's kind of neat about, you know, what we all do and why we do it. It is. I feel like a lot of what we're doing, we're all in our stride now, and the internet helps a lot. You know, the other cases that are out there, the system has, because there's no more investigative journalists, because, you know, police departments' budgets are cut short. There is no more, you know, people out there able to spend the time or the manpower sometimes. Mm-hmm. And for us to be able to do that, for you to be able to do that, is what allows us to all keep doing what we're doing as well.
We're kind of lucky on this one because we've got a good investigative journalist that is, I do know, working on doing an article on this case.
And we're going to have him on soon.
Right. You know, two reasons. One, this is a local boy that died. And number two, he's our soldier, you know.
And you will have to come back and update us. We are out of
sure
time.
Will. Sure will.
Good luck with the Army next week.
Okay. I'll be in touch.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank
you. Judy. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
you
everybody.
Too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know,
bye.
I think
thank
for
you.
These families... Thank you. I think for these families, then, that it's that we're right around the corner from the holidays again.
Yes.
And, you know, at dinner tables across the country, families like Judy's and so many people that we've had on, you know, the Prescott family, the Turner family, the DeVinny family, the Horton family. I mean, we the list is so long. Beth Perfetta's family. Their loved ones are never going to be able to sit back at that holiday dinner table again, ever.
You're right.
And so, you know, I hope that while people are eating dinner this year and being with their family, that, you know, in their prayers they take time for those who don't have that loved one and they look around the table and realize how lucky they are.
I'm with you. I see that Dan just joined us.
I do see that. He's late, but that's okay.
I do apologize. I was trying to
I'll make you make it up to us. Recent news reports continue to highlight the scams against seniors. This type of activity often increases during the holiday season. Many times the thieves and scam artists study their victims. They know their names, even the names of their grandchildren. Thieves will call a senior and report that his or her grandchild is in jail and needs $1,000 for bail money. Or they just won the lottery. That's one of my favorite ones. Naturally, police fall for this. People fall for this and very quickly to talk about the safety and all the aspects of this and how to avoid this. We are being joined by Detective Dan Dabney with the Merced, California Police Department. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Can we reenact a scam?
We can surely try.
Can we try? Okay, so... I'm calling you, and I'm telling you that you have just won $5,000.
You know, and I think in my best day, I would believe you because everybody needs $5,000.
That's right, but you have to send me a money order so that I can facilitate the expenses that are associated with this to the bank. Now,
absolutely, if you're going to give me $5,000, I'll do what I have to do. Right.
Okay, but when I get that kind of call, detective,
absolutely. It
what do I do?
Every day, multiple times a day. And what do? You hang up the phone, plain and simple.
Do I call you after if the number showed up on my caller ID?
You know what? You can, absolutely. We do. You know, this type of crime is occurring on a day-to-day basis, multiple times a day to. Every type of person you could possibly think of are good citizens that are working hard to earn their money, and these criminals are out there trying to take your money by a simple scam, just as you just explained, you know. And we want to know about it because we have different aspects and different avenues in place right now that we are able to report this information so that we can disseminate it out to everybody else. That's what it's all about, is sharing the message, informing everybody. Hopefully everybody will hear and say, hey, this sounds familiar, and hang up the phone when they get a call like that.
Well, how about the people that, they're not watching their senior parents, you know, transactions. And then the senior, you know, pays this amount, and then somehow somebody goes in and hacks their account, and large chunks of money all of a sudden go missing. The senior's not going to say anything. They're going to feel too embarrassed. How can somebody that isn't living there anymore, it's grown, maybe a child or, you know, a grown child or a relative, how can they talk to their senior stubborn parent so that they know that when these kind of things happen, they shouldn't be embarrassed and that action needs to be taken?
You know, and that's just it. They just have to open their mouth. They just have to talk to them and inform them. You know, and it is difficult. My father alone, you know, just turned 70 years old, has been playing these games since I was a little kid. He used to tell me as I was growing up, hey, if somebody knocks on the door and they're looking for a certain sweepstakes number, it's pinned right here on the bulletin board. Because they're, you know, different generations, especially the older generations, are more trusting. When they hear that, hey, somebody's going to give you $5,000, or hey, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, I'm going to win the $10 million thing because this paper tells me I'm going to, they believe it.
So is it on, like, remember the Irish sweepstakes and things? Because my mother used to have them.
Absolutely. The
pink one with the bobby pin and the hair pulled back, and it was a very pretty little thing. But now, are they doing this and recreating these scams with lottery tickets on the internet for people?
It's getting more sophisticated than that now, because it looks so legitimate in today's day. You know, we have lottery scams, we have lottery clubs. Those are the big, you know, a section of the scams. We have prize and sweepstakes scams, which are pretty common, kind of like the Publisher Clearinghouse, what used to be legitimate, or the Reader's Digest, which used to be
legitimate. Isn't Publisher's Clearinghouse legitimate anymore?
Still legitimate. However, people have forged their seal, if you will, and they are putting it out there, scamming people with it. So they're victims as well, okay? And it's just that the names, a lot of times we've got to be careful with these scams, because they might look legitimate, they might look like the real deal, such as Publishers Clearinghouse, but just a couple little things are different on there, which makes them something completely different, makes them a scam, and that's what's stealing the money from our not only from the older generation, but also from the young generation. So it's because it looks so good. With today's technology, today's computer technology, especially with scanners and Photoshop, they can do amazing things that make it look so legitimate, it's scary. And so what do we do, right? It's one of those things we have to be informed, and we have to realize that it is out there and get the word out, hopefully. And obviously that's what we're doing tonight, so...
Are holidays more, is it more prevalent during the holidays?
You know what, yes and no. Yes, it's more prevalent during the holidays and for some of the scams. You know, during the holidays, of course, we like to open our hearts, open our wallets to those that are, you know, in need. What we're seeing a lot of are the different scams that are requesting money for, we'll say, police associations or fire associations, or for the veterans of America, or for the disabled vets of America. We're starting to see a lot of that type of mail coming across, you know, requesting $20, $30 here and there. You know, that is, although it's not a big dollar scam, in other words, we're not losing a whole lot of money out of our pockets, it's still filling the pocket of somebody else that is not legitimate. So that's what we're seeing, you know, during the holiday seasons especially.
Is housing a scam where somebody is signing over a document or for services on their house, and then all of a sudden they see that there's a lien for something? I mean, are we seeing more seniors getting scammed with their homes?
You know, I haven't seen so much of that. You know, is it a possibility? Absolutely. Real estate scams are definitely, you know, on the rise. Not so much though with the seniors that I've seen. Now that doesn't say that throughout the nation it's not occurring, but we're not seeing a whole lot of documentation on that. What we are seeing with the real estate is those that might have. have two or three homes, and they may be renting out a vacation home. What's going on with that is, if I have a vacation home, let's say in Monterey, California, and I posted on a relatively well-known website like Craigslist and saying, hey, I have a vacation home for rent. What's going on with that are the scammers are actually taking that information, recreating it on the Internet, and placing it on the Internet so as to rent it out as if it belongs to them. And what happens with that is your deposit and, whatever, if you're cleaning deposit or whatever, that money gets sent off to the wrong hands. And then when the people show up to go on their vacation, there's no keys, there's nothing there, and it's a big scam. So that's occurring more with the real estate right now than we've seen in a long time.
Denny, you live in Vegas, and I'm sure there's got to be a lot more scams down there that are ongoing and bright in people's faces.
There's all kinds of scams. Of course, some people argue that the casino games are scams to some degree. But I was going to mention that I've been here a while now, and I've made some contacts for people who did or currently work in casinos. And they tell me that where I think there's a similarity between what these people tell me and these scams perpetrated on the population is that the casinos make an awful lot of them. Of course, you always hear about the whales and the people that bet hundreds of thousands of dollars a hand and that kind of thing. But a lot of the people are just, you know, quarter bettors or dollar bettors and this and that. And you talk to people who have been to Vegas and you ask them, say, how was your trip? Did you make any money? Geez, I was ahead, the first night I was up X number of $100, but, you know, eventually I lost it all back, but I had a great vacation. It was worth it. I have no complaints. And the casinos figure that greed will make sure that they can continue to build these multi-million dollar establishments and keep them running because most people won't quit when they're just a little ahead. Most people want to be a lot ahead. They want to be able to call the boss up and say, hey, guess what? I ain't coming back. You know, I just hit it big in Vegas and I'm staying. So greed, and I think greed to some degree, you know, obviously when people think they won something or are going to get something for nothing, I think in certain cases that greed aspect takes over. People start seeing dollar signs. And, where do I sign or where do I send my credit card information or where do I send my check? I don't know. Is greed on our part and the part of the public that ends up being victimized by these scam people, do we contribute in the form of our own greed looking to get something for free or thinking we hit it big?
You know, you hit it right on the head, Denny. That is, you know, crooks take advantage of our natural desire to win, plain and simple. You know, we want to win. We are, and that's just, I think it's instilled in our minds since we were little children. And to have an opportunity to win $10 million or $5 million or anything of that nature, it's what we want. And, yes, we do contribute to it. I'll tell you, I was meeting with an 85-year-old veteran. The man was just an absolute gem. He was a pilot in World War II, just has the sharpest mind of an 85-year-old that I've met with. However, he has been taken for over $8,000 just in the last month with these scams, all because he said, my nest egg has come in. I finally won it. All these years he's been playing to win, but yet he's having to pay in order to play. And that's the problem that we're seeing with not just the seniors, but with everybody. You know, the biggest thing with these prize and sweepstakes scams that are going on, you don't have to pay to play. If you have to pay to play, it's obviously a scam.
And so it's a something for nothing. Don't ever. I was always told, not, you know, everything costs something. If you take something for nothing, you will get nothing and lose more than the nothing.
Yeah. that's the mentality behind it, isn't it? You know,
it is.
It's amazing though, and the, these scammers are taking advantage of our desires, and so yeah, we're greedy, but so are they, and they're going to push and push and push until they get what they want, and with all with the hope, you know, that if we have that little twinkling of hope, then they're going to be able to, you know, that maybe we're going to win. They're going to keep pushing until they get all of our money. And that's the scary thing about that, you know, these types of scams that are out there. So lottery scams, the lottery scams, the prize and sweepstakes scams, you know, the Nigerian money offers that are out there.
Oh, please. I don't understand those. I don't. And I can't understand how people will do that. Oh, what about those online poker game things that I see where people say that they're, and they are, they're winning money.
Sure.
How can that be?
Well, you know, a lot of that stuff that you see is overseas. And because obviously we can't do it here unless you live in Las Vegas or somewhere, you know, where gambling is legal. So, you know, those sites, they pop up here and there, and they are playing and they are using their credit cards. It's kind of like, it's kind of like working with the E-Trade, you know, the day traders. That are out there. You know, it's a risk. They take that risk. I've seen people lose thousands of dollars, you know, with online gaming and then come back and say, oh, I was hacked, you know. And in reality, we know that they got onto that type of a website and they're losing thousands of dollars because there's no guarantee. Unless the cards are right before you, you know, that's – and you can watch the dealer deal. It's really difficult to say – that it's a legitimate game, you know. So that's another big scam that's out there, and you know, people are playing or paying to play that even.
Is that a criminal activity though? If it's in another country or
no.
You know,
no, it's
so there's no recourse.
So if you lose, you lose, and unfortunately, that's the downfall to it. If it were that simple, then everybody would be doing it, and hopefully winning, but unfortunately that's not the case. So, but you laugh about the Nigerian money offer. I think that's funny because that is a one of those that are out there that is just people fall for every day.
But how can they? That's ridiculous. What,
you know,
what is there to fall for with that? I don't get that.
Your guess is as good as mine. You know, again, comes down to greed, comes down to, you know, a little bit of ignorance. You know, and we always say ignorance is bliss, but, you know, in a case like this, you know, doggone it, you just don't know, you know, you don't know what drives people to do what they do sometimes. And, you know, with something like that, if I get an email, well, they're getting smarter with this money offer. You know, in the past, we used to see that, oh, they'd take a picture of money and they'd tell you, hey, listen, the money's here. You have the money. It's got a special powder or something like that on there that's toxic, and you need to send us money in order to purchase this magic chemical to go on the money, and therefore the money will be clean and we'll be able to send it to you. Now, that one's just beyond my mind, but all for it.
What about when you and I see, we all see this, you've won, you know, $1 million in euro dollars, and I hit the button and then go claim it. How many people do that?
All the time. I mean, this is, you got to, when we talk about how many victims there are out there, when we talk about fraud and identity theft, there's over 15 million victims a year that are on this, losing thousands upon thousands of dollars. So, you know, I would like to say that with the information that we're putting out there, that the numbers are starting to decrease. In reality, it's not. It's still increasing because they're getting
smarter.
It's
probably tripling.
Yeah.
It, for everyone that gets caught, there's three more. There's somebody else that has a better scam, isn't there?
I tell you what, yes, and they're good. I made mention of my 85-year-old friend. When I went over to his house, he says, hey, you're going to receive a phone call, or I'm going to receive a phone call from the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. And it's going to be this gentleman on the line, and he's the one that's been working with me to get my money. I said, really? He says, yeah, no sooner did he get those words out of his mouth, the phone rings and the gentleman calls. He claimed he was from Washington, D.C., from the Federal Trade Commission, used actually one of the Federal Trade Commissioner's names, so he's actually falsifying who he is. And when I was speaking with him, of course, he sounded like a young boy talking on the phone, but you can hear a slight accent, so which was, a light bulb going off in my head. But as I was speaking with him, he was so convincing that I was bewildered on how good this guy was. He says, "Oh, sir, I portrayed myself as this gentleman's father or son, and I said, 'Hey, you're taking money from my dad. You know, why are you doing this?' 'Oh, sir, we're not taking money. We're trying to stop the money.'" He totally turned it around, being he was from the FTC, turned it around saying, "No, we're trying to put a stop to this, and we're trying to get the money back to your father." I said, "Well, the reason the money was stopped was because we put a stop on it at the bank. They didn't do anything for this gentleman." So they're wise. They're changing things. The Nigerian scams, they take that type of scam and they twist it around and they reformulate it because, yes, you're right. You know, for everyone that's caught, three other new ones are coming out, and that's definitely a worry that we have.
Maybe churches. How come? You would think that the churches want to keep their baskets full when people have this happen to them. It's very sad, but they can't give and tithe to the church. You would think that you would hear more about this in the community. That churches would pass out the information. That it would be posted places. That they would be taught just like. The things that happen when there's something on the back of your windshield, and I see this a lot during the holiday, and the person who's elderly or older gets out, and this could be anybody, goes to pull it off, and they're robbed.
Yeah.
To me, that's no different. So why it's a robbery, but you just can't
Absolutely.
See it.
It's
so
a robbery of your identity, a robbery
right.
of your money. You know.
So why can't the churches... Why aren't we seeing the churches that people are going to every week, perhaps putting this in the bulletin or saying we're going to just hold a little informal session afterwards
sure.
over coffee about safety? I don't hear that being talked about. Do you, Denny, at church? I know you go to church.
Well,
I know it's hard for you to murder a $5 bill, but I know you go to church.
It's something. In fact, we had quite a time, it was last year actually, with the homeless or allegedly homeless panhandling in the church parking lot. And they got so aggressive they would actually block the driveways when people were trying to leave. They wouldn't block you coming in, but they hit you when you went out. And assuming you didn't give them everything in the collection basket, then they wanted whatever was left. And they got so aggressive they were actually blocking the driveways, and the church ended up putting on they recruited volunteers like a security force for the church parking lot to make sure the driveways were kept open, because the police didn't really want to be tied up every mass for 15 or 20 minutes at the end of the service. But the priest did make an announcement for a couple of weekends in a row that, look, when you give to these people, you know, we obviously a church was supposed to give. I mean, that's one of the things we're supposed to do, but he said, I'm going to contradict that a little bit and say it's not a good idea to be giving to these people in the parking lot. First, you don't know who they are, whether they're really homeless, what they're going to do with the money if you do give it to them. He says, secondly, he says, they are, you know, obstructing traffic and blah, blah, blah. He says, and as long as this is a place where they can make money, they're going to continue to come back. He said, they'll only get discouraged and stay away if you stop shelling out. So there was a lot of head shaking because, you know, people were saying, well, gee, I always thought the Catholic Church said we're supposed to open our pockets. Well, you know, the priest did qualify that. He says, I know that's the usual. He said, I'm telling you. He says, we're not going to resolve this problem. You're going to have to continue to deal with these people until you stop giving to them. So he did take some action on that, and it actually worked.
And I also think, too, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, well, that a lot of the elderly do not go on the computer. They don't even know how to do it. They're being taught how to just do email, like respond and back and forth. That's it. And so they don't know because they have telephones. They have hard lines. You still have a lot of these scammers calling their homes, don't you?
That is huge. Yes, absolutely. And it all starts with the mail, actually. They're receiving the mail stating a simple letter, very legitimate looking letter, that states that, hey, $15 million has been set aside for you. You are the sweepstakes winner. All you need to do is call this 1-800 number. When they call the 1-800 number, of course, they're trying to get as much information from the person. Once they have your phone number, they are going to be relentless and persistent. And just like at church, you know, with the people that are looking for handouts, as long as they're there, they're going to be asking. And that's what these folks do. They will call and call and call and basically run you in circles to the point where they eventually get you to send $1,200 or $1,500 to secure or for insurance purposes for your money or processing fees. And they'll go one step further. Now that they've got your phone number and through the mail, they'll send you a check even. I've seen it where they've sent a $3,000 check to a person. That person got the check. The following day, they called them up and said, "Did you get the check?" "Yes, I have the check." "Good. Okay, go deposit the check." And with that, so this is a good faith check. So now that you have, you know, it's only a portion of your winnings, but we want to send you that good faith check so that you can send us back the insurance. Isn't that amazing?
It is. And you know what, Detective Dan Dabney from California, I do have your telephone number. We would love to have you back. You and I and Denny are going to do some role playing, though, so the people can hear the different kind of scams.
Let's do it.
I think that we should. Thank you to the CrimeWire team, our director of research, Kim Colton, and public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com, Delilah. Our next show will be Tuesday, November 30th, 2010. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers, seeking justice.
And if you would like your case profiled on CrimeWire, please contact us at thecrimewire@gmail.com, or you can hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show at www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play. And remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard. When there is nowhere else to turn, visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. Good night. God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, and Susan Murphy Milano. And happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.